437 through 463 of Midnight Sanders.
Bernie, I respectfully disagree. We are going to make this show the best show ever. I'm very good at shows. I have a good show brain. I think that you'll see that my brain is very big for the shows.
What like show is a lack of brains.
Like I'll give you a chance to talk, Bernie, but my brain is like the leader. It's the leader brain for the shows. I can't do Trump without doing Sanders. Like, they bleed. Yeah. They're like your Garrison Keillor. They just bleed into each other.
Right. At this point, I don't have to.
You're calling it to order? You're calling it to order? All right.
Gavel in the CBNC, the Comic Book Party National Convention.
This is serendipitous timing. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Hey Kids Comics. Yes. If you didn't know by our small, shitty radio play there, this is Hey Kids Comics. I'm Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, is the Jedi Cole Houston. This is issue 189. The only title that I've come up with ever that I'm actually proud of, and I made sure that Cole has acknowledged that like 17 times.
This was not one of my own titles. In the annals of Hey Kids Comics, this stands alone as one of those handful that puts forth, and I had absolutely zero involvement.
And I'm horrified by that. This is the Caucus on Infinite Earths. I'm going to let that sink in because I'm really proud of it. Very, very, very
that's
well timed.
Caucus.
That's good caucus. That's Greek, right? You can. Yeah, you. It's on a pita. There's some falafel, some tzatziki. This very, very well timed by us. We're coming at the end. I know this is an evergreen show, but as we record this, the Democratic National Convention is getting ready to wrap up. The Republican National Convention has already wrapped up. We're in the middle of a heated, insane presidential season in 2016, if you're listening to this from the far-flung future or the past.
Try to bag more than your limit. It's poaching.
I thought it would be cool to talk about politics in comics, politicians, political figures in comics, presidents in comics. I didn't realize the can of worms I was opening when
that
I.
That is the
oh
truth.
My God.
I mean, the sheer volume of research material was ponderous.
My childlike naivete coming into this was almost Trump-like. we're gonna take shots tonight because our man Bernie's out of the running. We're gonna take shots.
That's right.
But we're not gonna stop doing Bernie impressions forever. So just accept that from now until we'll put it on issue 289. We'll put a moratorium on Bernie Sanders impressions. You got 100 episodes.
I think so. But for now, you know, you can expect things like comic book Bernie Sanders saying, "Burn on," and then you know,
burn on. That is a great mental image.
Yeah, and then he just catches flame.
So,
but not like the full body thing, like Human Torch. He literally just catches on fire, has to drop and roll, and then he's fine.
Yeah,
but he's got the Wolverine. It's weird. It's like Human Torch and Wolverine all rolled into one because he's got the healing factor. Burns like to a crisp. And then he heals right back up.
So,
and questions why he keeps setting himself ablaze.
So there are two main kind of functionaries in this world. One is the true politician that has eked his way into comic books, whether for the purposes of satire or irony or just as a plot point, as you'll find with Jimmy Carter. They couldn't even make him irony.
Yeah.
They couldn't even make him satire. He's just in there calling the FBI at some point.
Yeah, it couldn't be something like, you know, Plant Man taking over peanut farms or
that
something.
That is brilliant. Swamp
I know,
Thing.
I want to retro
Swamp
this
thing. You could have made it Swamp. I'm very Swamp Thing centric right now. I just finished the
like
first
a,
book.
Like
oh,
a
my
peanut thing.
God, the first
which is how my doctor described it. Well, anyway.
The first book of this is already a tangent. But the first, yeah. I just finished the first book of Saga of Swamp Thing, ending with the Jason Blood, weird.
The White Monkey.
Yes, good lord, is that not God damn it, Alan Moore, you're brilliant. You're just, you're killing
well,
me.
Well, that, and, you know, the, ideally, the character of Demon the Demon was deliberately challenging in that, you know, he was established as a rhyming demon, and different authors just sort of either do or do not bother.
Mm-hmm.
And Moore not only bothered, but wrote brilliant
mm-hmm.
poetry.
And the weird kind of Svengali nature of Jason Blood that I never knew about, like the kind of puppet master string pulling, putting people in the right places to stop the. It's a shame that there hasn't been more Jason, like that Jason Blood hasn't had his own like Vertigo treatment, like Starman or Swamp Thing, or
yeah, I think the Demon was lost in a mainstream book for many years. When it
correct,
you know, it lends itself. The character lends himself beautifully, but we aren't here.
We aren't. We are here to talk about some demons.
We're not here to talk about the Demon. We're here to talk about politics. And remember, citizens, do not imitate when I immolate.
Oh, are we over the rhyming demon of?
The rhyming Sanders.
So yeah, there's two types. One type being the real life politician, and then the other being the fictionalized created politician. And there are so many of them out there. And I think that a weird place to start, I will go with a weird place to start is in the form of Prez, the comic book.
Preston Prez, the teenage president of the United States. If you thought it was a stretch in Watchmen for Nixon to have repealed the 19th Amendment, or
yeah, right.
I don't know amendments.
We're ill prepared.
Yeah, but you know, to get himself elected a third term in office. I don't know. Apparently, a lack of amendments. This is sort of amendment precedent here. The teenaged president. I don't know how they managed to bypass the rule of age.
Mm-hmm.
Things got so bad. In fact, in many ways, it occurs to me what this was is a cautionary tale
okay.
about a post Trump presidency.
Is that right? Is that right?
This is what happens. This is the precedent that will be set. In a post-Trump world, is that essentially you have
vampires? Is that what happens?
Not so much that, but just the teenage president part. The rest of it was just to you have to thinly veil these sorts of things.
Oh, right. It's like the X-Men with the racism thing. This is
yeah,
okay.
Like the Frank Gorshin episode of Star Trek. If
Are we comparing the comic book, the Joe Simon comic book Prez, with one of the most influential satires on race relations ever?
Absolutely it is.
Okay,
because,
great.
You know, they were trying to warn us way back then through lighthearted, kind of like Archie for President kind of thing.
Yeah, so my thing was they've never shied away from weird representations of politicians in comics ever, or politics in comics, because politics in comics has always been if not a carrot, you know, a plot carrot, that it's been a plot stick. they're either going to lead
you. Sometimes you're
there.
Beat about the face and head by it, depending on who's doing the writing.
Right. Well, depending on whether it's Frank Miller or Alan Moore, which is a political debate that I would love to see, because if you want to talk about two guys on opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to politics, and also when it comes to the way that they portray politics in comic books, you need to look no further than Frank Miller and Alan Moore. I mean, they're very much on either sides of that spectrum, and I don't know if their writing styles really lend themselves to it, but there's some really interesting. I mean, Alan Moore writes kind of political, not necessarily satire, but political commentary. Probably better, I would say, probably better than any writer out there.
I think he has that unique ability to both rail against his own country's politics, past and present, in the way that the best British comic authors do.
Right.
You know, there's I'm reminded of a cover of an issue early into the Constantine series where there's a picture of Margaret Thatcher, who was still in office at the time, and it said something like, "Warning, voting Tory can be hazardous to your health." not Alan Moore's work, but still very much in keeping with the way that the British are very reserved and kind of wink at protest,
right?
Type, you know, we're in this country, we just get outrageous, and you know. But he also does a good job of Moore does of, you know, with V for Vendetta. It was very much a path that could easily be followed. Because fear and isolationism are just an open door for totalitarianism.
No.
And not to...
careful. Careful! Yeah,
not to overly politicize this in a in the real world, Trump for dictator, that...
But you make an interesting point with what you just said, which was... These are genuine fears that have existed since we talked about totalitarian regimes back in you know the Captain America comic books, right?
Yes.
You know, this is a prevailing wind that has existed in comics since the 40s, and it has never gone away, as evidenced by V for Vendetta. I'm sorry, continue. I interrupted you.
Oh, absolutely. No, quite all right. And it's important to engage in these things because what V for Vendetta does, you know, it's a very British thing. It was published in Warrior magazine in England. So it was, you know, decidedly British. But if you read it and if you do like we often do, overthink it a little bit, it does express at its core how easily dictatorships rise. You know, we think of it as something that only happens in the third world, but it has happened repeatedly in the rich world. The rich world. I actually saw that term used recently. The rich world, apparently. The rich world of Richie Rich. Ultimate one percenter. And, you know, but Moore also takes aim at American politics in Watchmen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in painting a kind of 80s dystopia that was certainly possible. We, almost Watchmen was almost where we could have been, minus all the, guys running around in tights and giant blue domes and stuff.
But, well, we're like 5 years from that. Let's be honest. Yeah, cool. I mean, in reality, we're like 5 years from that. But also with this also, if we talk about V for Vendetta,
there's a lot of crowdsourcing on that.
We talk about comics bleeding into we talk about politics, you know, bleeding into fictionalized representations of politics, bleeding out into real politics because of the usurping of the Guy Fawkes mask, which is what V wore.
That's a good point. Yeah, because in this country, in England, it's known as a Guy Fawkes mask. In this country, it's known as a V for Vendetta mask.
Right, it's the anonymous mask. It's the Occupy Wall Street mask. Yeah.
Yeah. Or now it's simply become the anonymous mask. But, yeah, kids, guess what? England beat us to that one by about 100 and some odd years.
Right, right. And so we've taken that.
All you hipsters, you didn't invent that.
And neither did Alan Moore. And that's the thing, is that, you know, what we've seen is this, without the knowledge of what came before, this kind of taking on this of an idea from a comic book. Because, I mean, that's really the sighting of all of this starting. It has to be weird for Alan Moore to look at, you know, anonymous, you know, hacking Donald Trump's whatever records or, you know, anonymous attacking, what's the church for, the Phelps Church, the church that's always picketing and wearing the mask of a creation, you know, that he, a comic book character that he created because he created this anarchistic comic book character that fights fascism.
Well, what's interesting about that is it made the Guy Fawkes mask readily available in the United States.
Right.
Which you would have been hard pressed. You couldn't just like go to Oriental Trading Company when you're getting some paper lanterns or those little fold out paper pineapples for your luau party and the
love the you love the Oriental Trading Company,
yeah,
man.
But they did they yet to offer Guy Fawkes masks, so it wasn't something you could get, you know, for your when you order your Super Bowl or your football shaped chip and dip plates and stuff for Super Bowl Sunday. They just never offered that, but that literally it popularized the Guy Fawkes mask beyond its origins, and then it became adopted.
Right, right. It became a martyred icon of overthrowing fascism. But on the flip side, because we were talking about Frank Miller, if you look at his work in the political spectrum, it's insane. It is Frank Miller insane. Are you familiar with Holy Terror? Do you remember Holy Terror?
I'm not familiar with that because I when that term invokes Batman Holy Terror, which was
which is what this was. Which is
it was the Batman one. Okay.
Yeah, he pitched this idea in 2006 of a story where Batman goes off and fights Al-Qaeda and basically
okay, well,
tortures
the original Batman Holy Terror was on something holy
oh,
other.
Oh, no, you're right. This is Holy Terror Batman. Batman Holy Terror was that was a different thing completely. No, this one was he created this book in 2006 called Holy Terror Batman. And the idea was, it was a Batman comic where he would go, after Gotham was attacked by an Islamic terrorist group, by Al-Qaeda, he was going to go over to wherever that he decided Al-Qaeda was, and then basically murder and torture all of Al-Qaeda. That was Frank Miller's thing. And you can see, I mean, it was released under Holy Terror because DC was like, no, yeah, we're not going to do that. So this is his idea, you know, the war on terror, in his idea was not a working from within to, you know, in a mask to overthrow. It was to literally get – Batman gets a knife and goes and kills Al-Qaeda. And they were like, no, we saw what you did with All-Star Batman. What did he – yeah, like you're not touching this. You're not. No, this is not going to happen. But yeah, it's insane because let me read you a quote, okay? This is what he – this is the Batman book he wanted to make. This is the Batman book that he wanted to make. For the first time in my life, I know how it feels to face an existential menace. Now, this is after September 11th. Keep in mind, this book was put out. I believe it was actually released later. It was released later. It was released but he says, you know, they want us all to die. All of a sudden, I realized that what my parents were talking about all those years, patriotism, I believe it isn't some sentimental old conceit. It's self-preservation. I believe patriotism is central to the national survival. Ben Franklin said it, if we don't all hang together, we hang separately. So in his mind, this represents Batman going over and murdering a whole slew of people, which is just insane.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was
in the misbegotten notion that fighting violence with violence is tantamount to fighting fire with fire, which is true up to the point that fighting fire with fire just breeds more fire.
Grant Morrison, who's one of my favorite writers, who we will do a creator spotlight on in conjunction with I'm sure an episode on chaos magic, because I do want to do one on that. Says this in 2006, he said, "Batman versus Al Qaeda. It might as well be Bin Laden versus King Kong, or how's about the sinister Al Qaeda mastermind up against a hungry Hannibal Lecter? For all the good it's likely going to do, cheering for a fictional character as he beats up fictionalized terrorists seems like a decadent indulgence when real terrorists are killing real people in the real world." I'd be so much more impressed if Frank Miller gave up all this graphic novel nonsense, joined the army, and with a howl of undying hate, rushed headlong into the front lines with the young soldiers who are actually risking their life and limb versus Al Qaeda. Great,
it was very reminiscent of a lot of what was going on post 9/11,
right?
Where there was this sort of violent jingoism,
right?
It was like, you know, we're American, we'll kick your ass songs, and it's like, no, that's not really who we are, because what you're doing is just buying wholeheartedly into what they want you to be so they can sell their ideology overseas.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So,
and so many just brilliantly played into that.
Right. And as we've talked about, 9/11 has been represented in various degrees of taste in comics, yeah, over time. From,
oh yeah, it was everything from like the, you know, title character of some indies. I guess they were trying to pay tribute to like the Captain America punching Hitler type of thing, with their character blowing Osama bin Laden away. You know, that, like, that's their version.
And one of the coolest ways that I've read, and I've read the first couple issues of it. Full disclosure, I haven't read all of it. But Brian K. Vaughan and Tony Harris wrote a book called Ex Machina. Did you ever read Ex Machina?
No, but I'm aware of that one.
It was,
anyway,
it was pretty cool. The conceit, the precipice that it balances on is that that there was one superhero in the world, and on 9/11, he, in an alternate timeline, you know, in alternate history, he diverts the second plane. He's able to divert the second plane because he has a power to control machines. Well, the story isn't so much about him and his superpower as it is the fact his celebrity after that. He becomes the mayor. He gets elected as the mayor of New York. So the only superhero kind of takes on this Scarlet Pimpernel idea of, you know, you have to be the mayor of New York, but also, yeah, you are the only superhero in the world. So it's kind of it was a cool comic. But, you know, as far as fictional political heroes or political characters go, do you have any favorites?
Well, I think, you know, one, it was kind of funny. I was aware of the Justice League ripoff known as the Suicide Squad, is the Squadron Supreme. Suicide Squadron Supreme.
Suicide Squadron Supreme. That sounds like a Taco, you know, Bell. That sounds like fourth meal is what that sounds like.
But it seems to me like in creating this tribute trough at Marvel, their so-called tribute actual ripoff
tribute trough.
They kind of had to one up DC, you know, a billionaire or millionaire or whatever, you know, depending on your time frame and what money sounded impressive at that time. Playboy just wasn't good enough for their Batman ripoff.
Right.
Nighthawk. So what they gave us was a Nighthawk who is, you know, Nighthawk by night, President of the United States by day.
Which is ridiculous.
I don't know if he had life model decoys, just hang around and nod off to sleep in the Oval Office and watching old reruns of Bonanza, but I'm not really sure of the dynamic there, especially if they were on a protracted mission. It's like, oh, sorry, I've got to go meet the premier at noon. You guys take over.
Right, so, his whole 8 years was just lame duck. That's what it was. It was just
or lame bird is the case.
Or when the cameras turned on, he's like, "Sorry guys, I wasn't able to sit. You know, I wasn't able to sit in the congressional hearing for a universal health care. We were defeating Starro. My bad.
Yeah, I was like, why does the president have a shiner?
It's like Lex Luthor came to town with an army of white Martians, and we had to go to work.
Yeah, it's like, my fellow Americans, gotta go.
Right. Like, and nobody's gonna argue with him.
Yeah,
because he just saved the universe again.
I guess, I don't know, but it seemed like he had to wear a hood, you know, to protect his secret identity from the Secret Service.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not really sure what the dynamic there was. But what was interesting is I did read the up to a point when I just got tiresome. There was a Squadron Supreme miniseries back in the height of miniseries.
Yeah.
And I guess they jettisoned the presidential Batman. And what was interesting about that was they actually not only had a unique president, but because this is from some sort of extra-dimensional Earth, they're United States. Like, I thought it was very clever that all the states had different names.
Oh, really?
And I couldn't begin to tell you what they were, but they were really kind of clever, you know, like Yorkson or something. And I don't remember any of them, but it'd be like, you know, meanwhile in small town in Yorkson.
Yeah.
You know, this is going on.
That's really cool. So I'm going to have to look into that.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious now what all was going on there. But as far as fictional presidents, I guess the real breakaway would have to be the rather ironic, in retrospect, a Ronald Reagan-themed President Rexall.
Oh.
Frank Miller's Give Me Liberty.
Oh, man, yes.
Which is one of the most bizarre-ass things you will ever read, yet amazingly good and amazingly poignant and quite a satisfying read.
Really?
It's amazing because it combines just very thoughtful storylines with just weird-ass shit going on. and it somehow strikes a balance. But Rexall is amazingly, in retrospect, it's like Trump combined with Reagan.
Okay.
Because he's just a complete ass, you know, behind the scenes. And part of the storyline in Give Me Liberty is a staged coup in which President Rexall, along with all but his Secretary of Agriculture, are blown up in a terrorist attack.
Right.
And then the Secretary of Agriculture becomes president, and he's just a tool for the bad guy.
Okay.
And you know, slowly goes into a power-mad decline, you know, going from a very self-effacing, very simple, you know, not rock the boat type to the point where he's just practically turning into a petty dictator.
Right.
And so you have this sort of president and then the new president. And then meanwhile, apparently Rexall's brain was saved and the it's in like one of those little Monsieur Mala in the brain.
Oh, no. Yes.
Characters running around, the Surgeon General, who's a bizarre kind of like reject from Phantom of the Paradise in his own right, is cloning a new body for Rexall so they can have their president back.
You know,
as comic book presidents go, you can't get a more storied president than that.
Right, right. It's pretty deep. It's pretty deep. See, my two aren't presidents. Mine are for instance, Two-Face.
If you want, wow.
Yeah, you want to talk
politicians. Yeah,
you want to talk about just politicians. Talk about Two-Face. Think about the satire here. It's a politician by the name of Two-Face who makes all of his judgments by flipping a coin. Has a psychotic break when he's marred on one entire, like, literally somehow right down the middle, right down Piscean, you know, like just dead center in his face. But how much political satire exists in a character like Two-Face? You know, how much?
Yeah, and it's one of those things you don't really think about until you start thinking about it. Then you begin to realize, whoa.
Right. It's really cool. And the other one I really like is a mayor. And he's not only a mayor, but he's also a superhero. And he's not only a superhero, he also rode around in a rusty pickup truck.
I think I know who you're talking about.
With the Green Lantern for a good long while.
Oh.
And that's, Oliver Queen, mayor of Star City, which I thought was a really cool conceit to that character, which is he started as the social before social justice warrior meant what it means now. He started as kind of the original social justice warrior, where, you know, they would the comics that, and we talked about it back when we were talking about our issue on racism, where we talk about the addressing social injustice and we talk about addressing racial injustice. Green Arrow did all of that. And even
That's
to the
true.
Point where they, you know, the Green Lantern and Green Arrow, they had the hard traveling heroes where they literally just drove across country in a pickup truck, you know, fighting social wrongs.
It literally proved the axiom: if you go looking for trouble, you'll find it.
At what point?
It was literally like, "You want to go look for trouble? Sure.
Sure. Let's go. Do you want to stop looking for trouble? Nope. Still plenty of road.
Well,
all right. But upon returning to Star City,
in the way? No, there's not.
Was elected as an ultra liberal mayor, and fought fought on a political front homelessness and corruption and all of that stuff, while at night very much like a Nighthawk. Yeah, okay. I wanted to say Nightwing. I knew that wasn't right. Very much like that. Held office during the day, and then at night put on his jaunty Robin Hood cap and his bow and arrow, and fought crime on the other side. Sort of a Daredevil-esque approach to crime fighting. But that was always a cool one for me, because you would see a lot of like how to balance that life, and I thought that was really cool.
Well, in fact, you know, I was not aware of Oliver Queen's mayoral bid.
Yes, yes.
His mayoral hat and his mayoral quiver of mayoral arrows. But I thought you were talking perhaps of Defenders member, one Isaac Christians, a.k.a. The Gargoyle.
Oh, yes, The Gargoyle. I forgot.
Who was actually a mayor himself.
Right. Right, I had forgotten about the Gargoyle. Now, is the Gargoyle? Because I'm not as familiar with the Gargoyle as I am, let's say, the Silver Surfer or the Hulk or any of the other members of the Defenders. But was he akin to DC's The Demon? Was it kind of a?
It was apparently. I wasn't that familiar either. I just loved the look of the character.
It was a cool ass character.
Yeah, it's this orange gargoyle with this purple, crenellated period costume. You know, this Ren Fair costume,
mm-hmm.
Adapted for wings. And apparently, I guess he would actually inhabit a proper gargoyle.
Oh, really? Okay.
So sort of like reverse demon.
Right.
And at least I think that's how that worked. But don't quote me on that, because I really have no idea. I remember seeing various issues of Defenders and stuff that he was in and buying those, because I thought it was a kick-ass character.
It was
and
a kick-ass character.
My older brother drew a really kick-ass picture. I think he was going to paint on my bedroom wall where that never happened. And it probably saved me from having to explain who the hell that was, or force Clay to paint a shit ton of other characters, so there'd at least be some damn context.
Nope, just the Gargoyle. She's like, yep. What's that? That's the Gargoyle. Of course it is.
That's the Gargoyle.
Sure it is.
Yeah. Long before Disney's Gargoyles.
And if we're looking for a bridge between created politicians in comics and then the insertion of real politicians in comics, look no further than one. He's already been discussed on the show. We're bringing him back around. One, Ronald Reagan. This guy, poor Ronald Reagan, found himself in comic books at a time when there was... You had a more, I guess, a more open bent into politics and comics than there had been in the past. You had Frank Miller's and Alan Moore's creating books with more political satire and kind of using it as a stick and not a carrot at that point. So Ronald, I think, got the real pile on. He got the pile on.
Well, he's in the Dark Knight Returns. Oof. Sake is this sort of grizzled old. I mean, it looks like the like if a bowl of grits became sentient and walked the earth in an Armani suit.
It's the most successful Fire Marshal Bill I've ever seen.
Oh, that's true. And now I'm gonna do Fire Marshal Bill cosplay.
Damn it! That is the first and probably only Fire Marshal Bill impression you will hear on It's Comics.
I can guarantee this is the last time you'll ever hear a Ronald Reagan impersonating Fire Marshal Bill.
Ever in your life.
Yeah, and I will endeavor to make sure we don't even have a regular Fire Marshal Bill impression.
But yeah, because Reagan was the catalyst for the events of The Dark Knight Returns, of your Batman versus Superman movie that you just saw in the theaters and tried to make sense of. Reagan was the reason for that, because essentially what had happened is through, you know, Reagan's Frank Miller's perceived Reaganist jingoistic bent, he pulls Superman onto his side as sort of a lapdog for his policies.
We've got to beat the Red Menace.
Well, sure, always.
At the end, because the red was more menacing back then.
Right, better dead than red. Don't forget.
That's right. And, you know, over time, it sort of, the inevitable failure of communism, as we like to call it, which put a lot of comic characters out of work. The entire Soviet super soldiers.
Right, man.
Had to move into other things. Perhaps most successful was Vanguard, who started a band, a cover band, doing Rolling Stones and Beatles and Bruce Springsteen, apparently. So.
Oh, did he now? Yeah. Okay.
It's the old axiom of beating our hammer and sickle into a guitar.
So it's this swords into plowshares is now swords into PV amps.
Pretty much into a Les Paul special. I don't know what the hell they called it. Is that Les Paul? Is that right?
No, you're fine. You're good. Les Paul's good.
Okay. I was hoping I could like conjure up. I'd actually heard some like models or whatever, but I couldn't. Didn't go that far,
and he did not escape the gaze of Marvel Comics in Captain America. Captain America really introduced politics into the Marvel Comics in a big way. I think that it makes a lot of sense. You know, you have a character called Captain America. It deals a lot. You know, Captain America has given up his Captain America-ness to become Nomad because he didn't agree with policies. It's an ongoing thing in those comics.
Because any time he drops the mantle to become either Nomad or U.S. Agent or Agent Steve Rogers or...
Steve Rogers, Agent of Steve Rogers or...
Yeah, or Angry Old Blonde Guy.
Right, or Angry Young Old Blonde Guy.
And writes letters to all the newspapers on Star-Spangled Shield stationery. Just, you know, a nice little kind of watermark of his shield. That way it's not blocking out the important stuff you're writing about, all the, you know, how the poor editorial in last week's Thursday edition.
Right. But there was an issue, and I have these, and I didn't remember them until I saw this, which was there was a the Serpent Society had started turning people into snake people through like some serum that they developed. And
what do you mean, a serum?
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean.
The Serpent Society would naturally use a serum.
that's some good Cobra Commander.
It's self-evident.
I really wish that the movie would have been Captain America Serpent Society. It would have been a better movie. It would have been
He should not have had that buyer's remorse.
No, he should have gone for it full whole hog. Just full on, just gone for it. But issue 344 of Captain America, which was Captain America in Battlestar, if you remember that version of Bucky, shows Cap going into the Oval Office to speak to one President Reagan. President Reagan has been turned into a snake. God, just...
Yeah, you know, I was looking at some of the material on that. It's sort of like, at first my impression was it was somebody was watching the TV miniseries V.
Right.
And, you know, channeling that, or perhaps the seminal favorite 1973's
I don't think I've seen
You should see because it has one of the most haunting images, a makeup effect that utilizes an actual the actual physical form of a real living human being.
Okay.
As part of the snake transformation, the Serpent Society-esque snake transformation. And also, if you get a chance, apparently it's just now out on Blu-ray, when I was a kid, was in a double feature with The Boy Who Cried Werewolf.
Really?
So perhaps you could watch both of them and relive the experience I never got to have because my dad would be damned if he was taking me to see those movies.
Right, but the seminal image of this comic was Reagan as a snake man in his tidy whities attacking Captain America with an American flag. I'm not even going to insult you by trying to unpack the imagery in that statement alone. But I'll let you do the legwork yourself on that. I'm not going to insult you, but it ends up Reagan's okay by the end. Don't worry. He sweats out the toxin.
Supply side economics was in danger.
Right. Literally, the snake serum trickled down out of his body, and everything was fine. So there you go.
Well played.
Yes, thank you. Reagan made the cross, and so did so many other presidents. Virtually all of the presidents have made the jump into comics at some point. Do you have any memorable presidential appearances in comics?
I think perhaps for me the most memorable, because I remember this coming out and just being, this sense of shock and amazement and wonder and like wondering how this ever happened was Jimmy Carter appearing in The Incredible Hulk.
Yes.
To sign off on the official presidential pardon of the Hulk.
That's great.
Because, yes, the Hulk was pardoned for all of his many crimes against humanity by Gemma.
By Gemma.
I'm not sure if it was like a Billy Beer infused.
I had a can of that somewhere. I wonder where it went. Go ahead. I'm sorry, man.
That one just really stuck out because that was the first time I was aware of, any kind of actual, real life president appearing in a comic. So it was kind of that was a unique new thing to discover that was even a possibility, and we'll have to get into that a little bit here in a moment.
The one for me for Carter was when Starzar. Do you remember Starzar?
Starzar.
Not Starzar like Charizard, but Starzar was a character that was in the 70s character attacks the Justice League and then attacks Jimmy Carter and then Jimmy Carter famous, like the last panel is great because Starzar comes in and he demands $1 million from he comes to the Oval Office and demands $1 million from Jimmy Carter, and Jimmy Carter picks up the phone and he says it calls the FBI of all people, like FBI contact the Justice League. You'd think if you're the president of the United States, you would have a direct line to the Watchtower or to the Hall of Justice.
I would imagine in that moment, he was thinking exactly the same thing. You would think, as the president of the United States,
I would have a direct line. Oh yeah, but that was the Jimmy Carter. The other one that really stands out is Nixon. Nixon got...
Oh, God, night. Nixon's, like, all over the map.
Right, because wasn't Nixon in Watchmen?
Nixon was in Watchmen, yes, indeed. In fact, Nixon's kind of a central character in Watchmen. And that not only is Nixon in Watchmen, there's a wonderful... Dave Gibbons is a freaking genius. And this may be part of the meticulous nature of Alan Moore's scripting. I'm not sure whose contribution this was at full... But there's a scene where, as Dr. Manhattan has disappeared to Mars, so tensions with the Russians in the 80s return to real world levels, and Nixon's being whisked off to the secret locale for the, with the nuclear football.
Right.
With the controls, the button, as it was known in those days. And they show him boarding Air Force One, and Gerald Ford is boarding Air Force Two. And if you look very closely at that panel, he's tripping.
Really?
He's lost his footing as he's going up the stairway.
It's
very subtle, but once you realize what's going on, it almost seems painfully obvious.
Right. Oh man, did you have you heard?
So, but Nixon, I did a little looking around for Nixon in comics, and the man has been in everything. There was a wonderful Fantastic Four panel, mm-hmm. that I saw by Jack Kirby where Nixon's just phoning up the Fantastic Four on the vid phone. Reed Richards is practically ignoring. It's the President of the United States, for God's sake. And Reed is just so full of himself that he's not even paying attention. And this was during the period where Crystal had come in from the Inhumans to take the place of Ben Grimm when he was off being maudlin.
When he put on his trench coat and went walking.
Yeah, wandered Yancey Street and tore down the light pole street sign for the 15th time. They just have like a shed nearby full of those damn things. Some street crew can come and replace them every time Ben Grimm has another damn fit. So it was really Nixon. There was a comic cover. I couldn't quite work out who the publisher was, but it was some sort of alien invasion thing, and there was Nixon on that. He appeared in all manner of different comics, from the serious to the ridiculous, and undoubtedly played very heavily in underground comics as well.
Well, the Captain America, and I think it was in 175, if my research plays out, was the secret empire, which was, there was this idea that during the late 60s and the 70s, the idea is that Cap missed most of what had befallen America. And so they were trying to catch up. Like, he wasn't around for a lot of the, you know, the social discord that happened. He was thawed out, and then he was having to live it. He didn't know what transpired to make it happen. So what they did was, they have this thing called the Secret Empire, which was the comic book version of the Watergate scandal.
Oh, okay.
And instead of you know, bugging hotel rooms and the Oval Offices and all of that, they're all these guys clad in purple robes, you know, kind of Crimson Cowl-ish purple robes. And when Captain America corners the leader in the Oval Office of the White House, it's all off panel. All you see is kind of a perspective from the angle of the leader of the Secret Empire. But he, you know, he's caught and he commits suicide in the Captain America comic. And it has been said since then that it is Richard Nixon who is the leader of the Secret Empire commits suicide because he gets caught as a metaphor for all the Watergate stuff that happened. That's their way of, instead of now, you would just get, you know, Secret on Watergate Earth, and it would be a leak. It would be Nick Fury's files, you know, that got leaked because Natasha Romanoff, you know, failed to break into the Watergate Hotel, and you know, there would be a whole thing. But
oh yeah,
but yeah, so that was Nixon.
Yeah, in fact, Nixon, like I said, has I actually for some of the flavor art, I put together a collection of Nixon comic book appearances because there were so darn many. But I have to give a special nod in the research that you did to the folks at Comic Book Resources.
Yes.
Because they put together, I mean, certainly it wasn't comprehensive, but a single example of every single president of the United States for, like, God, how many? The last 10 or so?
Right, right. More than, yeah, I would say more than 10. But, yeah, but absolutely, at least the last 10.
It takes you, yeah, it starts with, yeah, I guess you're right. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, so FDR, appearing in a Siegel and Schuster comic, Federal Men.
Federal Men.
Federal Men.
The
and he's just sort of, you know, he's kind of hanging out. And
right, he's just
Harry S. Truman in a Shazam Captain Marvel story. My favorite is Dwight Eisenhower in a... some sort of, like, I think it's like a Mighty Mouse.
It's Mighty Mouse.
It's a Atomic Mouse.
Ah, yes.
Giant Comics number one is given the Medal of Honor by Eisenhower.
Possibly the first time an anthropomorphic super...
I don't know if that was maybe an indictment on the Eisenhower administration. They're just handing out Medals of Honor to cartoons or what. John Kennedy meeting Superman, which does remind me of... One of the best kind of Forrest Gumpy moments, you know, Watchmen's got to come back in there somewhere.
It always does.
Where Dr. Manhattan meets John F. Kennedy, knowing full well his fate.
Right.
Because once off, once he becomes, you know, becomes this entity that is Dr. Manhattan, then everything's happening simultaneously. So regardless of how he encounters the news, he's already aware of it as he's shaking his hand. And it was very, very poignant line there where, you know, he speaks of Kennedy saying, you know, how does it feel to be a superhero? And he replies, you should know.
Oh, see, that's cool.
Yeah, that was just a really neat use of the character in from many different angles. Lyndon Johnson, then they go through everybody through to Obama. But apparently Lyndon Johnson was in the Doom Patrol of all.
So here's a question, you know, as we're getting ready to wrap it up, do you think that the editorial mandate to include the leader of the free world was a lot harder than it is now back in the day? You know,
I really do, because I think now we live in a culture where everything remotely mainstream is being embraced. So now it's almost kind of like you have to.
Right.
Where, you know, because I seem to remember, I always thought it was interesting when, you know, some comics chose to remove themselves from the real world and others didn't.
Right.
And I think what's interesting with Marvel, if memory serves, and I don't really have anything to back this up with other than memory, I seem to think that there was a period where Marvel's United States was presided over by someone other than a real president.
Yeah, and that's another interesting
president
thing. Right.
It was like, you know, president.
Right, President Mackenzie Phillips or whoever it is.
Yeah, whatever it was, yeah. So it was, you know, President Googleston. And I think at some point it just shifted right back. You know, there was an attempt to distance, to fictionalize this fictional world. And then they went straight on back to having a real presence, so you could have the spider fist bump.
Right, Obama, right.
You could have, you know, and especially at the point where, you know, you have Carter pardoning the Hulk, you've pretty much set a precedent that in many ways I think that was so high profile that may have been the catalyst for getting rid of real politicians.
Right.
Because it's rather a tenuous thing when you're trying to – I personally thought it was kind of cool wherever I did encounter a, you know, not real president, like President Steele.
Yeah. I think one of the coolest fictional characters that we haven't talked about was one that had escaped me because, you know, again, we have so many of these that we lost track of in the book Why the Last Man. You kind of have your scenario that you were talking about with President
because
Rexall.
We liked the last man.
Right. Your President Rexall idea where all of the men die except for one, and at the time the president was a man, so you had to go down to the I think it was the Secretary of Agriculture at the time, who, you know, had to become not only the president, but the president over a world in which everything has gone to hell.
Yeah, exactly. Every dynamic imaginable has changed.
Right. Just there are, you know, what are you going to do with the idea that now you have no men and you have to preside over this? What do you do in this weird stipulation where that happens? Like, you know, and you have to make, and they really did a good job of representing some very hard choices that you would have to make for policies. And I thought that was a really cool thing too. Why the Last Man does not get enough credit for being such a cool book. And
yeah,
it's a very good book.
I remember, I don't know if I finished it, but I do remember reading it. And, you know, the more we have talked about it recently, the more I'm realizing, dang, I need to go look that up, because it was a fascinating book. And and I'm pretty sure now that I didn't get a chance to finish it, I was probably borrowing trades and thought, well, I'm not going to have time for a while. And then
right.
Years. So, before we wrap up, it was on your list from your research, and it popped in my head even before I noticed that it was there. Lex Luthor for president.
Oh, yes.
Major, because there you do see a comic book universe removing itself.
From reality, in a big way.
You have bald Donald Trump running for president.
And it was, but you have a smart ball Donald Trump. And that was the coolest thing about Luther, was that he, you know, it's sort of like the Norman Osborn becomes the leader of S.H.I.E.L.D. thing that happened, where you have this brilliant, you know, egomaniacal, crazy manipulator that works his way into office. And now all of a sudden, his ultimate enemy, he has the power to through propaganda and through his public face, turn you the society against Superman.
Yeah,
that's cool. That is a cool thing. That's pretty awesome. Like, that was a cool ass move by DC. Like, it got poo pooed a lot, I think, in the comics.
You know, in the greater context of the post burn Superman, the post Man of Steel Superman, it made perfect sense.
Yes, I agree.
You could not have had the original Lex Luthor run for dog catcher. You
know? Yeah.
I don't know if you have to run for that, but you don't apply for it.
Right. I would think you. I would like you to have to run for dog catcher. I think it's a very important job. I think it's an important job.
That's right.
Yeah, but
well,
that's
dog catchers too.
Why don't you wrap us up and we'll get out of here? I think we haven't even scratched the surface of so many things that we could talk about, and we'll have to revisit a lot of them over the next couple months as we, you know, as we personally go through an election. I'm sure a lot of these themes will come back up, but I think we've done it justice for tonight. I think
we've done it justice, and Justice Society, and even Justice League.
That's right. That's right. So why don't you wrap us up? We'll get out of here for tonight, and we'll come back next week for more decidedly political commentary on Higgins Comics.
Absolutely. Yes, indeed, because we're coming to you, of course, in the Jedi Cole universe at jedicole.com.gov.
.gov.
.gov, yes. I am actually tweeting a little more often on Twitter.
Yeah.
Jedi Cole U, where I'm sharing some exciting news about the JCU. In fact, there's going to be some more exciting news coming fairly soon. And good night. Write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. Let us know what you think, how we're doing on everything. You know, who you would vote for in a superhero presidential election. Everybody would vote for Superman.
Dr. Druid. I would.
Oh, I know you would write in.
Green Party, Dr. Druid. That's my ticket right there. I would vote for the battling burlap, I don't know where I'm going with that. Just continue. Just ignore me.
Please applaud.
Please applaud. Nice. Jeb Bush reference. Oh, man.
I sometimes watch television.
Sometimes I watch the talkies.
That's right.
So, yes, you were tweeting. That's where you were.
Yeah, we at the Jedi Cole U, write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. Let's see, today being this Friday, a week from our next episode, or the weekend of our next episode, I should say, yang, which means we got to be on, get our act together and getting that one out. That very weekend, as you're listening to this show go live that morning, a little later that morning, you can come and see me at Infinicon.
Woo!
In Addison, Texas. August 5th through the 5th through the 7th, I believe it is. Is that right? 5th through the 7th? Yes, indeed. August 5th through the 7th. And on that very day, we will be premiering a brand new story arc for your listening pleasure, where we go all kind of fourth meal over bad guys. We are going to begin with issue number 190.
Yes.
On Road to 200. Rokish Eyes.
It's a great story arc. It's going to be so much fun. I cannot wait.
The I'S, Rokish Eyes. We're going to be talking about the top tier Batman Rogues Gallery with our special guest on this one, Josh Watson, who is an amazing Riddler cosplayer, but also an amazing Riddler historian.
Right, aficionado.
Is a Riddler maven. So join us for Rokish Eyes Riddled Through and Through as we begin the Rokish Eyes story arc, which we will then carry you through. It's going to be, you know, the most obvious Batman villains.
But it is the most obvious Batman villains. But, you know, and when Cole came to me with this, you know, we saw a story arc in it because it's not, we aren't going to be approaching it from the traditional fashion,
yes,
which we never do. But
challenge ourselves and our listeners to look at these characters in unique new ways. This was actually inspired by Josh's note to us about the a recent issue,
right,
of Hit's Comics, where he was complimenting, and we will read that on the air at that time because we're very much running out of time now.
Yes, we are.
It's better served on that show. But, yeah, be sure and check that out. It went from let's do a show about the Riddler and really do an in-depth story line, really in-depth exploration, to it morphing, as it often does when we get a really strong story. It's like, wait a minute, that's just part of it. So be sure and join us for Riddled Through and Through, followed by Silly Bird, Barrel of Laughs, Cat's Pajamas, and Coin Toss. If you can't figure out who we're talking about based on those, then you'll just have to wait a couple of years when we do our Tweedledee and Tweedledum episode.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Buy, collect, and enjoy your comics. There's a lot
that's
of...
That's got my vote.
I was going to say, I invite the Honorable Senator from Gotham to join us to take us out tonight. Can we have Comic Book Bernie Sanders to the podium, please?
All right, we're going to gavel everyone out of the comic book party convention. Now drawing to a close, balloon drop. God bless American comics.
Good night, everybody.